Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Hey, Joe, how do I pronounce your last name? Is it Camisa?
Yeah, congrats on saying my name the right way.
Thank you. Thank you. I always knew I could do it. No, I didn't know.
Thank you to the Academy for helping me in this prestigious honor.
I want to thank God.
Big ups to Jesus.
Big ones.
He's my weed dealer, Jesus. No.
The Reverend Jim Jones, not so much.
How's everyone doing?
Pretty good. I'm so hungry. I haven't eaten today, so you may hear me mute and chomp on my burger as well as turn off the AC on and on.
Crunchcast.
Hey!
You might hear me shuffle through a bunch of carts.
Sounds good.
What are you looking for?
So, what I'm doing is I'm trying, because on my stream, I'm going to be doing the top 100 video games of all time, as according to Nintendo Power in 1997, when they made such a list, which is a list of the 100 best Nintendo games. They say video games, but they mean Nintendo games.
Up to 97.
Up to September 97, the month that GoldenEye 007 came out and instantly went to number 7 on the list.
Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. And so it's a list that is interesting because it was right as the Nintendo 64 was like a year in and was taken off. But it predates Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. In fact, Zelda 64 has a huge feature in the same issue, the 100th issue of Nintendo Power. And also Conker's Quest, before it was Conker's Bad Fur Day, they did this like really lukewarm preview of it and showed like all the screenshots, and there's not like a single offensive thing in it. It's just a game about a squirrel.
Yep.
But anyways, yeah, it's a great issue. And I've always been fascinated by this list. It, like I said, it predates Ocarina of Time. It predates the Game Boy Color. So the 10 Game Boy games that are on it are all the black and white ones. It predates Pokemon, because that didn't come out for another year. And so this is a 100 best Nintendo games that includes no Pokemon and only four available Zelda games, all of which, of course, are on the list.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's got to be a trippy list. Like, there's got to be some games on there.
It's so trippy. You know what?
I mean, if there's four Zelda games out and all of them are on the list, that counts one.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all good.
So here's the thing, is that I've been planning on actually streaming through this entire collection, 1 through 100, on my stream for about 2 years now, and I've been collecting all the games, but I've only just now, I'm starting it on July 2nd, but I'm only just now collecting, or like gathering the carts together, and I can't find my copy of Battletoads, which is like number 90 or something like that.
Man, are you starting with one or starting with 100?
I decided to start with one, because it starts with a bunch of games that I know and everybody knows, and then it ends on just absolute batshit insanity. Do you want to know what the last game is?
Yes.
Aliens 3 on the Super Nintendo.
Why?
Do you want to know what the highest ranking, not the highest ranking, actually, do you want to know where Earthbound is on this list?
Yes.
So this is 1997, so Earthbound had been out for 2 years at this point, but there was no Smash Bros. So Earthbound sits at 60 on this list. It
seems
is playing.
High.
Huh?
I said, seems back a little high.
Shut up.
It kind of was. They kind of apologized for it. They were like, I know, but we're including this because it's so weird and we love it. It is flanked on both sides by number 59, which is Crystalis on the NES, which ranks above it, and Maniac Mansion, which is the next one below it. So it just sits in this middling spot with some other interesting niche games. 20 spots above it, somewhere like in the low 40s, is golf on the Game Boy.
What the hell?
Yeah.
There was only 100 games out at that time, Purnell.
Yeah, but Cristalis should be better than golf.
But here's the thing. There were more than 100 games out because guess what's not on the list at all?
What?
Super Metroid.
Super Metroid is on it. In fact, it's number 4. So nice. It's very high on there.
I was waiting for a whole huge shock. It belongs there, but
Super Metroid was very, very popular even back then. This is kind of shocking because there was like 5 or 6 games in the series at this point. There is not a single representation of Kirby.
Wow! That is actually surprising.
I didn't realize Kirby was that niche at the time.
It wasn't like. Kirby's Dream Land 1, 2, and 3 was out. Superstar. Superstar was out. And that made the top 20 when they did their 20th anniversary list in 2008. Kirby's Adventure on the NES, which is fantastic. Also, like, all the sports games and all the puzzle games were out. Like, I guess there's, like, 10 games at this point. But anyways, what is on the list is Adventures of Lolo, which is...
That's a good game. I like that game.
Adventures.
Really good. Just the first one?
Yeah, just the first one.
Okay.
The only thing I hated was that I feel like, I mean, maybe my memory's a little off, but even though they were all technically good games, they changed very little between them. It was like, you want more Lolo? You're getting it. That's all you get.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. Mega Man was out. There was all 6 of the NES games. There was 5, I think... 4 of the 5 Game Boy games, and all 3 of the Mega Man X's on Super Nintendo. Out of all of those, how many and which do you think are on the top 100 list?
Well, Mega Man 2 is on there.
But I hope it's below 3 where it belongs.
I think, 2 and 3. Wow. No, you have that. No. 3.
3 is definitely on there.
Okay, I've got 1 for 2, X, 1 for 3.
I think X is on there.
Got 1 for X. Anybody else?
I have no clue.
Mega Man 5 would be on there.
NES one.
I agree with that.
Mega Man 5 is one of the best. I would hope it's on there. Oh
my God. I think
five for Protel. That's actually my favorite.
Damn right.
Wow, I really don't like Mega Man 5.
That's okay.
Chris, you got quality taste, my friend.
Thank you. Great to meet another man of taste. What was it? A man of culture? Okay. Now that everybody has thrown in their guess, Mega Man 1 and Mega Man X, and that's it.
That's it?
Wow. The worst Mega Man game is on the list. I'm going to say that about X because X is a quality freaking game.
X is great. Well, like I said, X is not surprising.
Yeah, X is great.
Mega Man 1 is just not that. I don't know. That doesn't hold up. Shaney Page wants to know if Friday the 13th is on there.
No, Friday the 13th, no.
I'm curious about something regarding your guys' take on Mega Man X, though. Sure. You've all played 1 through 3, right?
Yes.
By the way, this is the SML podcast. Continue.
Oh, yeah, okay. I'm glad we're rolling. I wanted to say to roll before I started spieling about this.
Awesome.
Taking material away from your stream.
I always struggle with deciding which one is my favorite of the X 1 through 3. I generally kind of favor 2, but here's the rub. Like, X 1 was damn near perfect for me. The only issue I had was that I wish you started with the dash because it was so integral to the gameplay, which meant you kind of felt compelled to have to go to Chill Penguin first every time.
Yeah.
You start with the dash, but then they added the damn the 2X, those 3X Hunter jerks that would pop up in some of the stages, and they just kind of felt like fluff that just padded the game in an annoying way. So I give it love, though, because you had the option of fighting them. You didn't have to go seek them out in the levels, at least. But then X3 had the most and best power-ups for your armor. But it also had that cool element of how the final stage can change based on how you fight certain bosses. But the downside was you had to fight those certain bosses with their specific weapons,
they were permanently missable if you win too many stages without beating them.
Yeah.
It was like they basically forced you down a road. It was annoying in that I liked the option of choice, but a completist would not be able to just be like, I'm going to ignore these two guys and just do the levels and see what happens.
Weirdly enough, I've always considered X3 to be my favorite of the three, but I recognize that there is that annoyingness about it.
Also, the other aspect of 3 that drove me nuts, though, I am in the same bubble. Like, I look at X3 in huge favor. It's why I actually had the PC game and the SNES game back in the day. But, there was that aspect of it. And also, due to the nature of how they use those guys in the game, the levels kind of had these annoying breaks in them. Like,
yeah.
Normally in the X stage is like it would just you could fly right through it, but in this game is like here's a stopping point, or here's another stopping point. You lose the flow too many times. They just kept putting these stupid intermission segments in.
But I also like that the stages are really huge and like you can really explore them, especially once you go back with like power ups and stuff. It's not like now that I have the power, I can go back and bust up this pod and get an extra heart. It's like, well, now that I can like, you know, do the dash up jump, it's like I can explore this whole different part of the level, which feels like its own thing. And I like that at the time. It, you know, Mega Man's did not feel that adventurous at the time, it feels like, but then
the rough part about that, though, again, like I love the game too, but it ended up, the fact of it, like, okay, yeah, I can explore, it's really great, all these extra segments, but then you realize that Gold Mega Man exists. And to get him, you have to ignore half of the power-ups in the game. So yeah. It's like, well, I found this, but you got to ignore it. Because in order to get the best one, you got to just wait till the last stage. It was a weird design choice.
Yeah, it's weird. It is a weird game. I don't know why I love it so much, but I do.
No, I do, but I can't help but bring those points up. That's why I'm always like, I'm curious how other people feel, because despite how much I like them, I always feel torn because of these nagging issues with the games that have always been there.
Totally. But anyway, yeah, so that's what I'm doing, is I'm looking for my copy of Battletoads because it's in there somewhere.
Cool. What else is everyone what is everyone else up to? We didn't do an intro. We're just fucking here. I don't know where the show starts. I really don't.
It started last week.
This is going to be a cold open.
Basically. No, it's just going to be an open. It's just start the episode.
This is Saturday night.
What?
Hello, guys. This is Saturday Night Live. You're listening to a bunch of root talk about things that aren't reviews.
Brooke, how was your week? I want to thank you. We got a care package from you.
Now the other guys are going to be jealous, though. So
well, they should.
I am jealous
because
depends what was in it. I mean,
like Christmas tree cakes and stickers.
All right. Yep.
Jealousy
and food, rubber food. Yeah.
It's true. Jealous rubber food.
There were ring pops. Those are awesome.
I do love.
And my kid is obsessed with ring pops right now.
So I have a shitload of ring pops. I'll send you a couple if you want.
Put a ring around your finger. Ring pop. This is lollipop.
You like it? Now this
is a rain flavor. You can make. Yeah, there you go.
Pernell, your quality is so weird tonight. It's like cutting.
Yeah, he's kind of in and out. Yep.
It's exciting though.
Will we hear what Pernell is saying? Who knows.
What will Pernell say next? What did he say before?
It's almost like I was on speakerphone because I'm lazy.
Gee, I wonder why.
My week's going good. I got to introduce Pernell to Jose Canseco's Twitter account today. That's one of my favorite things in the universe, so that made me really happy.
Wait, what?
Yeah, I was just as confused. It's okay.
I'm going to have to send you a collage, Joe. I'm going to make you a collage of my favorite Jose Canseco.
I think we need a little description right now about what is going on with Jose Canseco and his Twitter account.
Okay, well, let me just, a couple days ago, I tweeted Happy Father's Day to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. And to me, that was my homage to how Jose Canseco, every holiday, will tweet happy whatever holiday it is to everyone except Alex Rodriguez because he hates him. I have been keeping up with Jose Canseco on Twitter for years. He's my favorite part of the platform. He's hilarious. He's awesome. And so I just, when Pernell asked me who Alex Rodriguez was or why I hated him so much, I was like, Pernell, let me just make you a collage of all my favorite Jose Canseco tweets. And now I'm looking for it so I can just read you a few of them. All my favorite Jose Canseco tweets about Alex Rodriguez. These are not my all-time favorite tweets. Let me just see.
That's a whole separate collage,
wait,
right?
Hold on.
Yeah,
hold
I'm
on.
Actually working on a
hold
bigger
on.
Collage.
Jose Canseco wished Father's Day to A-Rod this year.
I know, and it was after I made my tweet, and I was really pissed.
Now you look like an idiot.
I did until I
you look like a mean-spirited buffoon.
I do. I really do. Check it out. Okay. February 14th, 2021. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. April 20th, 2021. Happy 420 to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. These are Jose Canseco's tweets. Happy Mother's Day to everyone. And I told you Alex and J-Lo would not make it because Alex is a mother. And then eight commas. And that's the tweet.
Eight commas?
It's so good. I'm going to send you this. Happy Easter to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. He would later go on to tweet, Happy Easter to everyone, even A-Rod. Oh, hell no, I take that back. So good. Happy Mother's Day to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. He is a mother, all right. MF. This is the tweet. Happy 4th of July to everyone except Alex Rodriguez. And I'll just end on the note. He tweeted, at JLo, if you want the truth about Alex Rodriguez, call me 702-374-3735.
So is that good. His real number?
It was. I think he had to change it after this. But he's like, his Twitter is full of like personal addresses and phone numbers of him and people he knows. It's awesome.
Oh,
I didn't know I'd be like introing this information. I'll have like a better synopsis of what's going on here next week. And I'll have some more best ofs. I'm working on my big non Alex Rodriguez, Jose Canseco collage. So look forward to that. It's going to be a good time.
Can this be a weekly installment thing? Like
absolutely.
Brooks Jose Canseco tweet of the week.
Oh, it will be. This is now a legally binding agreement. You're going to really regret throwing that idea out there. So now it's going to be a thing.
So what's your tweet of the week?
Ooh, my tweet of the week.
Well, she's got to reveal that at the end of the show. Yeah.
Okay. This gives me a little time to get organized.
You have a built-in final word now.
I know. I actually told Purnell, I was like, Purnell, you have now unlocked like a new final word from Brooke instead of Gucci quotes. I'm just going to do Jose Canseco tweets.
Yeah, I actually, I've seen Jose Canseco play in person because he played for Texas Rangers for 3 years when I was a youngin', I think 92 through 94, something like that. And they lost, but I had his card, so I knew who he was. And it was an exciting time for Texas Rangers, just not that particular day when I went to see them play. I have nothing else interesting to say. I just want to say I've seen the man in person. I can confirm he exists.
Sweet.
Oh, Lord. Excellent. I've been to one baseball game in my life. One.
Same.
Only yeah, I think same for me as well.
America's pastime, like, right?
I've been to four, I'm going to say, and every time I go, the team I'm there for loses, so I stop going.
Awesome. You're a bad luck charm.
You should start weaponizing that.
I'm horrible luck, which is bad news for me because I got to play like a whole baseball game for this top 100 thing.
How many sports games are on there?
Is it one of the Ken Griffey's?
It is not one of the Ken Griffey's. And yet in the article, they mention that they kind of like half apologize for not including a Ken Griffey because those actually came out in 97. They reviewed Ken Griffey. Okay. I want to say whichever one came out second, they reviewed it in that
winning
same
run.
Issue. Winning Run, thank you. Yeah, that came out in 97.
Blades of Steel on there?
No, I don't think so. Their hockey representation was Wayne Gretzky's 3D hockey.
That's a fucking disaster right there.
We do agree on that. There it is. Yes.
Yeah. There's basically like one game per sport in this. I want to say except golf on the Game Boy, but there's another like Pebble Beach True Golf or something on the Super Nintendo. So there's like two golf games, but like kind of one each on all the other sports.
Wow.
Oh, that's
my football game will be Tecmo Bowl.
That's a good
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's not Super Tecmo Bowl.
Apparently not. Oh. And like there were so many Tecmo Super Bowls, but they're just like original Tecmo Bowl. That's the one. I'm like, well, that's cool because it has the coolest like the intro theme is really good on that one.
Yeah, it's just It doesn't have the license. That's why. It's just like, come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's like at least it's not. Huh?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Ken Griffey games and just like I got confused because it was Ken Griffey Jr. presents Major League Baseball, then Winning Run, and then Major League Baseball featuring Ken Griffey Jr. for the N64. They just inverted the title. It's very funny. Yeah.
And the Super Nintendo ones are great because they have soundtracks by Tim Fallon. At least one of them does.
Oh, Tim Fallon.
Yeah. And he throws it. He throws down on that one.
I think you will like Saturday's show, sir, if you like Tim Fallon.
Oh, boy. Always like
Tim Fallon. I don't know.
I'm talking too much in this episode.
No, you're talking enough. This is the Chris show. It's a good show.
I'm catching up.
Fun.
Well, we need some talking because we don't have that many reviews this episode. It's a small load.
I love how you had a solid excuse to end the show.
That's what
early,
she said.
But you wanted to be like, nope, we got to talk because there's no reviews.
I'll be here all night.
Just go to the show. You actually like talking to us.
Brooke, what were you saying? I think you cut out a little.
Just fun baseball, video game baseball fact. In the anime JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, everyone groans. In the anime JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, there is a video game called Oh, That's a Baseball. That's it. End of fact.
Oh, my God.
Oh, That's a Baseball.
It's so good. I'm going to find the image and drop it in the Twitch chat.
Please. I want to see this. That might be my favorite, like, baseball title now, even if it's fictional.
So Carrie, my partner, is probably the main reason I ended up watching JoJo's Bizarre Adventure back when we were just friends. And when we started dating, I immediately bought him a custom shirt that says, oh, that's a baseball on it. And it's a baseball shirt. I'm so happy. But yeah, I'll find that image and drop it in the chat.
I'm going to probably my favorite baseball, like, just thing is Tommy Lasorda's Baseball on the Genesis because of the title screen, which I'm going to drop in everywhere.
Jeez.
I'll drop it in the chat.
I'm a big fan of the Super Mega Baseball games. I think they're really solid.
Yeah. And like Base Wars Cyber Stadium, that one's great. Bad News Baseball's great. The one I'll be playing is Baseball Stars, which is good. It's quite good.
Mm. Is that Baseball Simulator 1000 on there?
No, it's not on the list. But
Super Baseball, whatever it was on the... That had all the robots and the weird power-ups and shit.
Yeah, that one's... there was an NES version of that and a SNES version of that. So I think there was a regular and a Super.
Yeah.
And hang on, I gotta look at this. At that... Oh, that's baseball. Oh, that's a baseball. Yes. That's perfect.
Get to me a baseball.
I finally found a picture of the fake cartridge. Hold up, popping it in now.
Oh, that's a baseball.
It looks like a good game.
Well, I guess I know what the episode image is going to be.
Nice.
It won't make any sense.
Is this weird
to me?
Is this weird circular Famicom?
Dude, I like that my only contribution to any baseball stuff was like, oh, I saw a video game in an anime once that was based on the game of baseball. Here are some pictures of that.
Hey, it works.
That's better than some actual baseball games. So
true.
You're at the very least, you know, averaging out.
Thank you. A little baseball humor for you, folks.
Anyway, should we get to reviews?
I guess.
Oh, I suppose.
Because we got some fun shit to talk about tonight.
You hope.
Well, I know the first one's good, at least, because I played it myself.
So you hope.
Well, yeah, I guess. Anyway, first game to talk about tonight is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge, developed by Tribute Games, published by Dotemu, released June 16th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge features groundbreaking gameplay rooted in timeless classic brawling mechanics, brought to you by the beat-em-up experts at Dotemu and Tribute Games. Bash your way through gorgeous pixel art environments and slay tons of hellacious enemies with your favorite turtle, each with his own skills and moves, making each run unique. Tim, tell us about your time with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah, man, it's a crazy thing to think about, like, how... I don't know how, like, old you have to be to, like, realize, like, how important those turtle games were in, like, the late 80s, early 90s, when, like, you know, the NES and Super Nintendo were coming on, and just, like... As licensed video games, like, they were a big fucking deal at the time, and then it kind of faded off after Turtles in Time or Hyperstone Heist or whatever. I don't know. Things got 3D and
I think Tournament Fighters maybe.
That was still fun, but like, I mean, I think you still looked at like the fighting games as kind of like a side thing, but like the beat 'em ups is where it's at. And then just kind of as things went 3D and the Turtles kind of faded away in the late 90s, and then they start popping up in licensed games. So then they became licensed games, I guess, after that point, and they were not good. I mean, there was, I don't know if there was a Game Boy Color game, but yeah, they started popping up like here and there, but not many of them, if any of them, were very good at all. There actually is a good GBA Turtles game, which I believe is made by like some of the people that work at Tribute. I don't know if they still work there now, but anyways, but yeah, they were really big games. Like the first game, which was not a beat 'em up, but kind of in spite of itself, just because Turtles were so fucking popular, like as a game that everybody knows and everybody's familiar with, at least like the first two levels of. Until they have to start swimming around the dam, you know,
damn.
Disarming bombs. But anyways, yeah. And there was like, you know, they've put the arcade game. I think that stuff made release on like Xbox Live Arcade. And there was a Turtles in Time remake. But this sucker right here, it somehow like threads this needle carefully between like modernizing, being a modern beat 'em up. Like most modern beat 'em ups at this point, you know, they have kind of shed a lot of their arcade roots, and they're very much into, you know, like you build your characters, you have more expansive move sets, so that they adapt better to kind of playing by yourself more. But you can still play with people over the internet, but still, like they try to expand and just deepen the game through the mechanics and the moves, and like they're good, don't get me wrong, I'm not criticizing, but it definitely feels different from like an old like 90s 80s arcade experience. But somehow this game like has a bunch of that new stuff in it, but still feels like one of the old Turtle games. And it's a magical trick that they did somehow in making that all like both feel new and retain an old feel all at once. And it's pretty great. So, yeah, you get in there, you got six characters, you got four turtles, you got April O'Neil in her yellow jumpsuit. You got Splinter. The game seems to take most of its cues from the old cartoon show. I don't really know what, I'm not up on what Turtles cartoons have done since then. I think they're mostly, 3D animated shows at this point. But
yeah, it's definitely the Fred Wolf cartoon. I mean, yeah. Irma's in it.
Yeah, when you see like Irma and Vern and like the, you know, the boss of the news station and like all those characters that
and
were
the
in
voice
that
cast
and the yeah, and just like it is really heavy going on that in an amazing way. There are so many Easter eggs and cool things to find in the levels and things to notice about. You know, you'll remember of the show, that you'll remember of the toys that were probably based on the show, but I don't remember from the show because I don't remember the show all that well. But it just like it is jam packed with Ninja Turtles nostalgia, and it looks great. Like, my God, the art in this game is so good and so evocative and so detailed and so exciting to play through the levels. But playing through the levels is just like a lot of fun. I didn't consider the old Turtles games to have like the most expansive move sets between the Turtles, but in this, it's like you have all the stuff you had in the old games. You know, it has the thing where you can grab a guy and throw him at the screen, which is great. It has kind of the jump kicks. It has like the stalling attacks in midair, but you know, all of a sudden there's more running attacks and sliding attacks and like uppercut attacks, and there's a dodge move that lets you like quickly move away from an enemy and then like re-engage them very quickly. There are super moves in this game and a bit of meter which you can build up by taunting, which me and my son did incessantly. Your characters, when you play through the story mode, at least there is a traditional arcade mode if you just want to play through the game straight in the classic fashion, but if you're playing through story mode, your characters are gaining experience and leveling up, which gives them more hit points, more meter, more moves to use. So there's a progression there. You have a world map you drive around. There's collectibles in each level, which you need to find for different characters that will reward you with more points for leveling up your characters. And yeah, the six characters, well, there's seven total, because once you unlock, beat the game, you get Casey Jones, who is the strongest character, statistically speaking. He has the most stat points, so, and he's just awesome to play as. He is a, yeah, it's great. And yeah, the turtles are sufficiently, all the characters are sufficiently different from one another that playing them feels different enough, and for you to develop, you know, preferences between them. And it's good and it's fun. And, you know, they realize that at least in a Turtles game, like, you can't just have foot soldiers walk in from one side of the screen. You need to walk in on them, like, just kind of doing menial tasks, like sitting at desks or serving sushi or hiding in garbage bags, really obviously.
That's what, like, I love about this game is just the randomness and the casual settings that you find the foot soldiers in. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah, well, I realized, you know, even a couple levels in, like, that's kind of an important thing for hitting that feel of those old games. It's just like there's a cartoon silliness to them that's evoked by the foot soldiers just kind of doing random shit around the level, and then suddenly be like, oh crap, we got to beat these guys up, and then just getting up and attacking you, and all of them being color coded for their different weapons. You know, different, like, so many returning enemies from those old games, and, like, returning hazards. It's just like, it's a constant barrage of, like, oh, I remember this thing, I remember this thing, I remember this thing. It's not, like, exactly the same to the point of being dull or anything like that, but just kind of, like, for, you know, a fucking old ass man like me, it's exciting. It's tickling my nostalgia vibes. Yeah, I played through the entire game with my kid by my side, playing co-op on the easiest difficulty, but, you know, we did not have trouble getting through the game. Like, your lives refresh every level in story mode, so it's not tough to do. What is really cool is it's super easy to jump in with other people. Like, you just roll up to a level and there's a button you hit and it will pull up a list of people that are playing that level and how many people are in that party and what characters they're playing, and you can just join right up with them. Oh, and it shows how far into the level they are, and you just pick who you want to join up with, and, like, in a matter of a few seconds, you are in their game, you pick your characters, and off you go, doing some cooperative beat 'em upping.
Beat 'em upping,
and it feels like I didn't experience any, like, lag or like frame skips or anything. It just, like, very smooth, just drops you in, you start playing. It felt like I was just playing the game right there on the couch, because I was. And had a great time. Boy, once you get, like, 5-6 people playing that game, it is just absolute fucking chaos.
Which is awesome that they have 6-player co-op.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's awesome that it is, the multiplayer is so functional and easy to get into. It's not like, oh, let me search up a lobby to jump into a game. It's like, no, I want to play this level. I can just roll up to it, see who else is playing it, and jump right in. You can make your own party, of course, and start kind of like your own game for people to join. But it's, you know, it pulled me and my kid into the game, so we got to play with other people online together. No problem. Just, nice. Yeah. And that is fantastic.
Nice. Pernell, I know you played this one as well. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I had a completely different experience, so I won't have much to input, because for whatever reason, I was having network issues. Like, I couldn't log into the game to play online. So it kind of went bust there. But I did play a little bit of the single player mode on the hardest difficulty. I got to, like, maybe stage 4 or so, and then I decided to kind of cut it because I'd rather be playing it in multiplayer. The game is still fun in single player, but I mean, that's not how you want to play a Turtles arcade-esque game. You want to play it in multiplayer. So I capped it for a bit. But in the time I did spend on it, what I came to realize is that the music is really good. When I got to the third level, which is the first vehicle stage, they had a lyrical track on there. And I kind of just let the game run while I went and did some cleaning in the kitchen because I wanted to keep listening to the song. And then I found the song on YouTube and listened to it some more. So the music was really good. As corny as it may sound, I was happy that April O'Neil is actually playable because she's been a part of the franchise forever. And though the cartoon, all the characters, including her, kind of had their episodes where they actually were a part of the adventure and they weren't just, like,
you know, someone to be rescued or on the sidelines. All the games were just kind of like, hey, there's this person in the corner who sometimes says, way to go, Turtles, or something. But in this game, they made her a playable character, which is cool because she fights with like her with a tripod and with judo moves, because in the comic books, which is funny because I don't think she ever learned it in the 80s cartoon, but I know in the comics she did pick up martial arts. So they kind of brought that into this and made her so she has like a martial arts. She had martial arts skills. I'm actually curious about this, if you worked with this at all, Tim, but I noticed that you get the taunt ability, and when you use the taunt, you can start juicing up your super gauge, but of course it leaves you vulnerable to attack, so you don't really want to just willy-nilly use it in combat, but is it pretty much the situation where, like, once you get like a certain number of them built up from leveling up, between each battle sequence, you can just keep taunting to max it out before you move forward?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Because I was like, I wonder if that's considered broken or not. And then I was like, I'm going to have fun with this. So it's not going to kill me. But I really did just like taunt. Okay. Move forward. Taunt. Yep. So I did kind of like that, though, because whereas in the old games, well, I mean, more specific in Turtles in Time, they had a super move, but you could only really do it. Well, the spinning super move, you can only do it when you found a power piece. Aside from that, they just had that really simple, like, get away from me, super, I'm special. Whereas in this game, they get, like, three specials, and as long as you have super meter charged up, you can put them to good use, which makes it a lot more fun to be like, I want to play around with my guy's special attacks instead of just kind of waiting for special pieces to show up on the screen. So I very much enjoyed that. Without going too rambling into this, though, because Tim already talked a great deal about the game, I think it's fun. I like what I played of it. The music's good. The animations are fantastic. The color is great. And it brings a lot of charm to the screen in a way that made me feel like, wow, I feel a little bit like I felt back when I used to play these games back in the day and watching the old cartoons. I ended up even watching the first two episodes of the original cartoon because nostalgia kicked in such a way where I was like, I want to watch more of the show again. So, yeah, mission accomplished. They did a great job on this.
How'd the show hold up for you?
It still holds up, though. It's kind of funny because it's always funny to listen to Uncle Phil talk.
Oh, I know.
Back then, I didn't realize that they were the same person.
Yeah, James Avery.
And Rob Paulson. And Rob Paulson is still freaking stellar at his voice work. But it was also funny because sometime in the same window of time, a friend of mine got a cheese grater, a shredder cheese grater. And I responded to him posting about it in quotations, like, a kitchen utensil with a question mark. And he goes, no, well, yeah, it's a kitchen utensil, but it's more of a cheese grater. I'm like, oh, come on. You know I was referencing the damn cartoon. And he was like, what are you talking about? So I had to go find the episode again, something to clip, like, this is where they say, he says, you can call me the shredder. And then Raphael goes, a kitchen utensil? Like, it just stuck with me. I remember it comes out of my pocket, like the back of my hand.
Why is your hand in your back pocket?
Because where I keep all my side weapons, all my ninja gear, man.
Smoke bombs. Your hand in the pocket. That's what I want to know.
Yeah, but I keep freaking smoke bombs.
All right.
Shuriken. Note to self, when I'm going to take down Purnell, get my hands in his back pockets first.
That's gonna get stuff.
Get his stuff.
I'm going to start busting up the ninjutsu.
So no. He keeps his shuriken, his boomerang, and his magic scroll.
That's right. All 99 of them.
Only 90s kids will get that reference.
Chris, anyways, yeah.
Either of you this?
No.
No.
I'm going to buy it this weekend.
Absolutely. I might play it. I didn't know it was going around, but I just, you know.
Well, Brooke, since we're a couple of Johnny-come-latelys, if you want to throw down multiplayer on that, I'd be totally down for that.
Make sure you get it on the same system.
I'm getting it on Switch.
I think it's on pretty much everything, yeah.
Yeah, I got Switch, PS4, PC, so hit me up.
Sure will. Well,
I just want to mention, the soundtrack is really good, and I think that is really important to a beat-em-up. Because a beat-em-up with a bad soundtrack is not always a great beat-em-up. It's a very important part, like when you're kind of doing something somewhat monotonous, that the music rips. And this game has a track which features Ghostface Killah and Raekwon on it, and there's another track with Mega Ran.
Mega Ran.
You got fucking Wu-Tang on here, and Mega Ran, and it's incredible.
So is there a total of three vocal tracks in the game?
Mike Patton is the one who redid the main theme.
Well, including the opening, then four songs?
Yeah, maybe something like that. Yeah, there's just quite a few.
Okay, I know there's one for Fighting Shredder. I know there's one on that highway level that I did. But then I'm guessing there may at least be one more somewhere in the game. Maybe the final boss fight or something.
I think the final boss fight and the ending credits. I haven't seen the ending credits yet, but it's what I remember reading.
Yeah. The final, I think, well, just kind of looking over the soundtrack, the Mega Ran track, I believe, is the final credits. And nice. The Wu-Tang track is the final boss.
Oh, man. Yeah. Your ears are in for a treat.
It's really good, and lots of good homages to the old soundtracks. Like,
also, we should probably point out, if you might be hearing us talk and go, Raekwon, Ghostface Killah, I don't care about those guys. Well, okay, I disagree with you, but fair. But with that said, I am very confident in the belief that even if you don't like those artists, the music they compose for this game will still slap for you.
Nice.
Like, it's really good.
Nice. Well, the game is sitting at $24.99. The good news, it is also available as part of Xbox Game Pass.
Ooh.
That's where I'm playing it until my Switch copy shows up in the mail. Who knows when the hell it'll show up?
Yeah, because as Purnell is referencing, that you can purchase a physical copy on Limited Run Games right now. They're doing their open pre-orders for all the physical versions and for all the systems. So it's available there. It is on Game Pass. I think playing it on Game Pass and then ordering a physical edition is a totally fine thing to do. But if you're not going to do either of those things, you just want to buy the game, you should buy the game because it's great. Like, it's really good. And also buy the soundtrack. So,
and buy the friggin' collection when that comes out.
Oh, yeah. Then the Cowabunga collection is coming sometime this year as well. So
I had no clue that Limited Run was doing a collector's edition or Shredder's Revenge.
Yeah, it comes with a Shredder figure.
It does.
Ah, dang.
It comes with a shadow box. It comes with a poster, strategy guide, a VHS style box, a steel book, free pizza.
I had to resist personal hard.
Pan pizza.
Yes, that's important. Every physical copy comes with a personal pan pizza from Pizza Hut for free.
That's fucking amazing.
That's great.
I love that they went back and did that too. Perfect reference.
I want a like action figure based on like just a one episode costume, like they used to do like with the toys. Like, I want Shredder in a train conductor's outfit.
Do you remember some of the weird shit they did?
Yeah, and don't worry, I am going to be dropping that into the chat.
What was your? I gotta ask before we go, because now you got the nostalgia kicking. What is your favorite episode of the 80s cartoon? Can you recall it?
Oh, Jesus.
It's one of the first three, because I had the first three on VHS as a kid, and I actually still have them as an adult, and I do watch them periodically. I want to say, like, the first time they kind of, like, infiltrate the Technodrome. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, because you have something. I want to hear more.
No, I'm trying to remember, though, because I really like the early ones where they're kind of like it. They kind of string together, but the really goofy ones are great too. I mean, the one I'm referencing is Murder. They did a parody kind of Murder on the Orient Express or whatever, and it actually has the Shredder with a train conductor's outfit over his already outfit, even though he is a human man and thus could disguise himself much more easily without his ninja gear.
I'm like that too. Like, I genuinely loved the original like three episode like miniseries they did when they introduced the show, and then when they brought it back as a full-on show, at least for a little while, they still kind of kept a bit of the serious but with some jokes involved the motif. But eventually, we're like, we got to get goofy because we got to keep kids engaged or whatever. Which, while it was a lesser show as a result, it resulted in some really stupid plots. Like, my favorite one was the one where Shredder realized that he really wanted to find the turtle's secret hideout. And the way he decided to go about doing that was he opened a pizza parlor that only delivered pizzas. You couldn't pick it up. They made sure to point that out.
and he made sure to advertise that he would put anything you wanted on a pizza, and he would just name the most elaborate, disgusting things, specifically to get the turtles to watch the commercial and order a pizza and have it delivered to their sewer hideout.
Yeah.
And that was the entire episode.
There was okay, I know this is going long. I'm sorry. But I really love, this is an early episode too. I want to say this is like in season one. The Shredder takes over a strip mall karate dojo by force. He takes it over, you know, with these students that are in it, and mm-hmm. he trains them to impersonate the Ninja Turtles and do crimes in order to frame the Ninja Turtles and make them like wanted. And the disguise that they put over the like the students is just like green, like paper bags, basically painted green. And then with the you know, it really bad disguises. And the thing is, it 100% worked.
It's so ridiculous. And they never even commented, like, how do they fall for these terrible costumes?
I don't know. The Fred Wolf Show is such a delight.
They had so many goofy premises. Shredder loses his memory. And gets a job at a fireworks factory and decide to build a fireworks so big that it could blow up City Hall once they took over. This is why he had no memory of who he was. He just decided he wanted to do it. So we're just like,
did I get a verdict from you guys on this game? I don't even remember. We're just
I said it should be purchased. Yes.
Okay. Good. Yeah. All right. Okay. We're moving on.
Give this cowabunga.
Okay. Shut up, Renell. We're moving on.
hey! Never.
Next game to talk about is.
Joe, you can actually right click on him in Discord and then click this mute.
Oh, you're talk about
anime, please. Time for Brooke to talk about Cartoon Man.
Yes. Next game to talk about is Birushana, Rising Flower of Genpei, developed by Idea Factory and read, published by Idea Factory International, releasing June 28th on the Switch for $49.99. Torn between warring factions and a desire for a peaceful life, can Shinao forge her own path and find someone worthy of her journey in this visual novel? Brooke, tell us about Birushana.
Oh my God.
Did I say it right?
Yeah, you did. Yeah, the whole thing, and Genpei. And I did not pronounce Genpei right the first time I read it out loud. So nice job. Good job. Birushana is a big deal right now. It's being incredibly, incredibly highly anticipated by the Otome and like general Ikemen dating game communities right now. I saw someone tweet earlier today, I am so excited for Birushana to come out, I'm going to throw up. People are really excited for this one. There's a lot of reasons for this. One reason is it's one of the main Otome titles being localized in North America this year and next year. Arguably one of the most anticipated titles of all the planned 2022-23 releases for the genre. When this game was announced, it was big news just because it's a really big, crazy title that's coming over here. And we just don't get a ton of those, especially at this high level of quality every year. The other reason that this game is being so highly anticipated is the premise of the game. The premise, in a nutshell, at least as far as North American users are concerned, is that you're basically Mulan. If you've ever wanted to be Mulan, or to just be a warrior disguised as a man and surrounded by sexy anime men, all of whom are beginning to question their sexuality simply because of your existence within their ranks, this game is for you. You're a warrior, you're disguised as a man so you can fight as the youngest heir to your clan.
I think this game might be for my wife.
Dude, this game is good. I want to talk to your wife, first of all. You're going to hook me up with her details at the end of this episode, rest assured. So yeah, you're a warrior disguised as a man so you can fight as the youngest heir to your clan, the Genji. Now, I don't use the word warrior lightly here. In this game, you will kill tons and tons of people using your sword. You're going to slit people's throats and stuff. The game is even going to make you, like, hear their death sound effects as they die. It's going to make you watch your victims, like, fall over dead. It's pretty brutal for Otome games, so just be forewarned. But for most Otome games, you're not constantly brutally killing people. This one's just special. And that's just one of the nice ways that this title is set aside from its peers as a standout Otome game. Lots of killing. Another interesting thing that this game has that most Otome games don't are character stats. That's right, anime men admirers. To get through the plot of this story, you will not only have to figure out the right things to say to get the anime men to like you, you will also have to build out stats in order to get the whole story and complete the game. The stats are as follows: strength, knowledge, and kindness. Another way this game is different from most Otome is this is a historical fiction game. It's based on the long-standing battles between the Heike and the Genji clans and the years following the Heiji Rebellion. a lot of politics, killing, death, taking wives of the other clans as your concubines. Lots of messed up things are happening during this period. But one of the things that is happening over and over again in this period and this game are the three sacred treasures of the Emperor are stolen back and forth between the two clans. Basically, whoever has the sacred three treasures has a right to claim the title of Emperor or something like that. Interestingly enough, the three sacred treasures of the Emperor are each associated with three virtues: strength, wisdom, and benevolence. Sound familiar? If they don't, you weren't listening to me. I just said the three stats of the game were strength, knowledge, and kindness. It's the same thing. Those are the stats. Cool, huh? But listen, but I had to share that because I did not look that up until I was like three quarters of the way through the game. I didn't totally understand how much historical fiction is going on here. I didn't understand a lot of the characters are real historical figures. In fact, all of them, I think, except the player character are. So yeah, I don't think most players are going to come across that little nugget of wisdom slash knowledge, or whatever you want to call that stat.
Slash benevolence.
Thank you. I love benevolence as kindness. That was so good. Are you an avid Atome game enjoyer beginning to zone out and get bored with all my history talk? Well, not to worry, because this game isn't all history. It's got plenty of dumb anime supernatural bullshit to enjoy. Each dateable historical figure is definitely going to have at least one anime trope going on per. You're going to be right at home. In fact, it's time to talk about my boyfriend in this game. When it comes to my boyfriend in this game, Tomomori Taira, I doubt any part of this guy's personality was fabricated from actual historic events, except maybe good at fighting, which, to be fair, is extremely anime. He's like, oops, all anime tropes, and I'm in love, and I couldn't be happier. My favorite part of this entire game, and there is just so much to love here, is that two of the characters are just blatant ripoffs of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure characters. This is wonderful news for me, and I am not even kidding. Tomomori Taira is definitely three parts Dio, one part Joseph Joestar, making him the ultimate human being of all time ever. And my new official anime husband, can I get some air horn sound effects? Wow, that's really good, you guys. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Announcement. My anime husband has not changed since 2014. He's always been Kishibe Rohan from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. But as of last weekend, my anime husband is now Tomomori Taira. So this is kind of a big deal, you guys.
Yes.
Thank you. Thanks for feigning excitement. You guys are really good at this supportive thing. You guys are really good at this.
Hand over mouth.
Dude, and I know you guys don't care about my anime boyfriends, but you're acting like you do, and that means the world to me, you guys. So anyway, kind of a big deal. Tomomori Taira is my husband. Continuing on the theme of this game being a heaven for JoJo's fans, Kujo Jotaro is definitely also in this game, taking on the guise of historical figure Yoritomo Minamoto. I'm not kidding when I say the voice actor they cast for this role is definitely 100% honest here, just doing his very best Jotaro impression the whole time. Like, it's on point. I'm sure the director who is directing his, like, voice is asking him to do this. I had to look up twice whether they actually just used Jotaro's voice actor for that character, which would have been insane, because Daisuke Ono, he's in probably multiple anime that each person on the show has seen. Incredibly famous. Anyway, it seems like I've kind of gone off topic with all this JoJo's talk, but I know at least two very special ladies that already have this game on pre-order who are going to crack this game open next week and start screaming about how right I am about this.
Here's the question. Do they have the normal edition pre-ordered or the limited edition from the Iffy online store?
That is a wonderful question. I will admit that I only know Marjorie has the extra special version ordered. However, my friend Alexandra, I don't know about that. I'm going to have to ask her right after this.
Looks like if people are interested, the Iffy's online store still has it in stock. The limited edition for $89.99 comes with a card set, a steel book, art book, just a lot of goodies, two disc audio soundtrack and drama.
This is actually, as little as I am of a collector of Otome merchandise, that's actually a really good deal for something like this as far as like community standards goes. I will admit, I only collect anime merchandise for one anime character, and that is Monica from Doki Doki Literature Club. More on Monica.
You're going to say from Friends.
From Friends! Anyway, I'm ready for my rating, Mr. Kamisa.
All right, well, the game is sitting at $49.99. What are your thoughts?
This is most definitely a buy-it. This is like a hyper-buy-it for Otome fans. This is going to be one of your very favorite problematic games out there. If you're not an Atome fan, do not start with this game. It is very out there. This is an advanced Atome game, let's say. Like, you probably need to play, like, 5 Atome games before you need to play this. But that is exactly what the fans want at this point. This is really good news. Overall, Atome fans are going to love this so, so much. They're about to lose their shit for this game next week, which is good news because most of the fans have already pre-ordered this one. Just one final note from me here. This game is more complicated than your average Atome game because it does have character stats in addition to 5 love interests you're trying to romance here as you get through the plot. I am going to aim to have a complete walkthrough of this game posted by the end of this week. And I would say if you're a part of the Atome Tweet community on Twitter and you want to know when I post that, I would say follow me on Twitter. But I'm not going to say that because if you are part of the Atome Tweet community on Twitter, you're most likely already aware of my account on there because I have probably already annoyed the shit out of you in that community. And I wish we were joking, but it's just all too true.
Good stuff. All right. Any other thoughts on the game?
I had a great time. And if you want to see why I love Tomomori Taira so much, I just tweeted about him. He's a keeper.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Urban Flow, developed and published by Baltoro Games, released June 24th on Xbox One and Series X and S for $12.99. Urban Flow is a game about the subtle beauty of city streets filled with cars moving in perfect harmony, but such order does not happen all by itself. The city needs you to control the traffic lights and to make sure everything goes smoothly. That means no crashes, no jams. Everything will run perfectly as long as you stay focused. Tim, did you stay focused?
You know, there's some other factors at play other than my perceived lack or of focus. Like, let's not put it all on me here, because whoever did, like, the urban design in this game should be fired. Anyways, yeah. So this is a game, and, you know, going into this, I... You know, again, I did one of mine where I, like, kind of glance the game and come to conclusions and then say, yeah, sure, I'll look at that shit. And I was, like, thinking it was a game where you had to, like, do a bit of... I thought I was going to be doing a bit more, like, street designing. Like, oh, how do you make vehicles move efficiently through this space? And, like, the puzzle of the game was going to be figuring out how to put... I thought I was going to be, like, an actual traffic designer, I guess I should say, and figuring out how, you know, how many lanes to put down and where to put stops and how to time lights and do it so that everything moves smoothly. And then at the end, I would have my beautiful, you know, city street layout where all the cars move through in an efficient manner and everybody's happy. But this is not that game, so forget everything I just said. What this game does is it drops you into kind of, like, little... bespoke, like, pre-made you know, intersections, I guess is the way to say it, and you are put in control of some of the traffic lights. Well, the only traffic lights in these intersections. Do they need more? Probably in many cases, yes.
Looking at the screenshots, these are some of the most fucked up intersections I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's the game. Most of the levels that I encountered only required using just, like, the face buttons of the Xbox controller. There are levels that require you to use, like, a, like, combinations with the bumpers, but for the most part, I found I could play this game with one hand. So I'm, you know, very relaxed getting into this, and I'm not, like, necessarily going into a zen state. I'm just sitting there thinking, like, who the fuck thought it was a good idea to have cars cross, like, a 2-lane highway with a track on the other side with no way of halting the traffic on the 2-lane highway. Like, who would do this? Like, who set up merges where there's a light for one merge, but not for the other merge? Like, who set this up such that you can have a light turn green because there's no train coming, but right after the light turns green, there's a train coming and, oh my God, someone's going to die. just that last one, by the way, is an actual criticism of the game. I mean, they're all criticisms of on some level, but the last one is just like, you know, your object here is to control the lights in such a way that traffic can flow through and cars not run into each other and people don't get pissed off. Because if a car sits at a red light too long, they will get mad and the light will just turn green, just like in real life. That is not how it works in real life. at all.
Support it just like in real life, but I am chewing a burger right now. So but that's so fucking funny. Okay, meeting.
Yeah. So you have to balance, like, you're watching, because there's always lanes and roads on just about every level that are completely outside of your fucking control, which is maddening somewhat, at least to me, in that, like, okay, you have to look for gaps in the traffic so that you can then, you know, make the light turn green, and then the cars are gonna go this way, and like the cars are signaling, like some cars are gonna turn, and that is a factor you have to take into account. Like, you know, I could have traffic coming from this direction if all the cars coming from this direction are going to make a right-hand turn, but they're not necessarily going to do that. You got to keep your eye on it. There's quite a bit of things to watch here and juggle. And at the heart of it, it is a game kind of about you're juggling the lights. I didn't feel like I was making like a fucking Picasso painting of traffic movement or anything like that. It felt more like when I'd play like a Game & Watch game on the old Nintendo Game & Watch collections, where it's like I'm just trying to balance things and before they get too stressed out and get everyone through the intersection. A lot of my time with the game, like I wasn't super into it. Like I said, a lot of the time I'm just kind of sitting back. I'm playing the game with one hand because I can. And I'm just like looking at these intersections and thinking just like, why would somebody do this? And that's what I spent most of my time thinking about while playing the game, is just like, why? Who would ever think this is a good idea?
City planner needs to get fired.
Yeah, like seriously, like especially that one with the train tracks. It's just like, and then there's one where like the train has like a stoplight and like, that's weird. I guess it's like a little trolley here, but like the main road that goes, this is like getting maybe a bit too in the weeds. Then they eventually start introducing like one button will control multiple lights. So that's its own fantastic shit show. And the thing is, like, once you get a certain amount of lights on the screen that you're controlling, like there's one that is, it's the world's, it's Satan's Roundabout. Where there's six or eight lanes going into it. And like the lights on opposite side are like tied to each other. And I'm like, it was hard to tell. Like there's a little pointer on each one of the buttons that points to what light it controls. But, you know, it's a lot to take in and it wasn't easy to, you know, the information didn't like jump off the screen at me. So I'm just like, I don't fucking know. There's nobody in this traffic circle right now and nobody knows how to use them in real life anyway. So I guess I'll make some lights green. And that level seemed to take a really long time to get through. You pass a level when a certain number of cars move through your traffic nightmare, or if you cause too many accidents, then the level ends in a bad way. You get like a certain amount of lives on each level. They're not your lives, they're imaginary lives that you're playing with, but if you cost too many of those, then you will lose stars off your final performance rating, or you'll just lose level and have to restart. There is a time slowdown mechanic that I didn't really utilize too much. It can just kind of give you a little bit longer to kind of take in what you're looking and figure out what lights you need to change. It seems like something that you'd use more in later levels. There are emergency vehicles, specifically ambulances, that you have to move through lights quickly. There are other vehicles like cop cars that I just like to leave at red lights because fuck them. They, unlike in real life, they won't just blow right through them. But it's weird the things that like some cars will do. I mean, I guess it's not weird that when you have a light go from, you don't go green, yellow, red, it just goes green to red. It's not surprising to me that like if the car is a little bit too close to when it changes from green to red, it doesn't slam on the brakes. It just goes through the intersection anyway. That is very true to real life, at least in Buffalo, and I'm assuming everywhere. But it's just like, who the hell like just merges, like nobody knows how to merge in this game. They'll just drive into the side of another fucking car. Like, you don't need traffic lights to manage a merge. Like, you just you take your turns, and like sometimes when you know you have it's like one of those things that's inconsistent. Like sometimes where it's like, okay, you might just like barely miss turning a light red and like a few more cars spill out in the intersection that you want. And sometimes like the cars will slow down and adjust. And sometimes they'll just barrel right the fuck into one another and cause crashes. And it's just like, okay, well, whatever. It's a pretty chill game. It's got some chill music. It's meant to be kind of relaxing. It seems okay. I just hated it.
That's one way to put it. $12.99. What is your verdict?
I don't know. Fuck it. It's your money, man. Figure it out. Why not? That's, I think, I don't know what you're into. I know what I'm into, and it's not this, but I don't think it's bad. But
it's not bad. It's weird, just not for you.
It's definitely not for me. It's a weird kind of fuck it. Why not? I think is where it is. Somewhere in there, like, yeah, you might be down. I might just be too obsessed with like the idea I explained at the beginning, where I was going to make beautiful traffic work in a functional fashion.
Yeah.
That when I was just met with just unholy creation after nightmare after, you know, the worst thing I've ever seen in terms of traffic layouts. So I was just like, oh my god, like I'm. But it, you know, the gameplay is just like tapping buttons. Like it's not, it might just not be engaging enough for me. Yeah, like, with, yeah, it's just kind of like, okay, cars are moving through, and then like once you figure out the flow, there isn't too much variance. But it still dicks you over every now and then, where it's like, okay, it looks like it's clear, I'm going to let cars through, and then it's just like all of a sudden, like a ton of cars will or a train will come through, and it's like, well, fuck, or like this guy's getting mad at a light. It's like, okay, great, get mad. There's a train there, you know. Die mad, dude. I don't like. It's your decision, not mine.
Just like buying this game, it's your decision, not ours.
It's your decision, not mine.
What do you think we are, reviewers? Fuck that.
Beware or be aware. Take your words like it's the modern review. You don't put a score on things. You just listen to how the person intonated it, and then you'd be like, I don't know. You might be like, you know what? I am obsessed with navigating lights over poorly designed urban areas. Like this urban is my hellscapes. Shit. Urban hellscapes. Like absolutely. Why is this road do a one way and that way? But then it does a one way in the other direction. But you can go across this way. But all the cars going this way always turn right. Like what is going on here?
Roads are dumb.
They are, and that is why we should invest in fast rail. My God. Roads, cars, they're the fucking worst. Jesus Christ.
The only reason.
There are so many great ideas for putting fast rail across the country, yes. And we're just not doing any of it, but it would be great to do. Just let's go. I want to be in Chicago in 3 hours. Let's go. Let's fucking go. I want to go to Boston for an afternoon.
Oh, shit. All right, well, Tim, that is it for you.
Aw, man.
Is. Yeah, sorry. Brooke, aren't you done, too? You don't have any more reviews, either.
I know, but I'm going to stay the rest of the evening. I don't have anything going on. I have no life.
Yeah, she's got to give us the Jose Canseco tweet of the week at the end of the show.
Oh, shit, God. I better find that. Good reminder.
It's after 11. I got to go to bed. I got to work in the morning.
Night-night, Tim.
Good night.
All right, well, moving on, next game to talk about is Thunder Kid 2 Null Mission, developed by Renegade Sector Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released June 15th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $7.99. The Robot Empire is back, and this time they're kidnapping all the humans. Take the role of Thunder Kid once again, rescue the hostages, and track down the enemy's mysterious new leader before it's too late. Take down enemy bots and massive enemies in a unique blend of retro style that can be enjoyed by casual players and speedrunners alike. Chris, tell us about your time with Thunder Kid 2 Null Mission.
Okay, well, I don't know where the speedrunning thing comes in. I guess, like, usually when a game is like, yeah, you can speedrun this, it's like they'll have, like, some kind of speedrunning, you know, aspect to it, like a timer or something, but, you know, I guess, I don't know, whatever. Okay, so Thunder Kid 2 is the sequel to Thunder Kid, which I reviewed at some point before. And both games, despite this one being called completely unique, Both games star Thunder Kid, who is, I don't remember, some kind of super being or something. Looks a little bit like a long-haired Bad Box Art Mega Man from the back. Speaking of the first Mega Man game, which we were before. And it's the camera is behind the character, and you move perpetually forward. You cannot turn the character. You only face forward. So think something like 3D Battle of World Runner or like Space Harrier, but not an auto runner. So, you know, it's just, you know, the camera is square on your back. You move from room to room and shoot things that are shooting at you. Often they shoot with enough bullets that, like, you kind of have to duck and not duck. You can't duck, but, you know, you have to kind of like weave back and forth between planes and, like, you know, jump around and try to find cover and things like that. And once you get to the end of the level, you pick up a crystal or you fight a boss, and that ends the level and you get to move on. Every three levels, there is a boss times seven. That's kind of how this goes. The thing that I like the most about the first game is that it's specifically in the wake of the American-Canadian War. And this game similarly takes place, yeah, just north of the border between the U.S. and Canada.
Bum, so, bum, bum.
Yeah, brace yourself. This game takes place in Canada. So, yeah, you go through the stages now. Instead of, like, the first game, so the first game starts with a tutorial that teaches you what the jump button does and what the shooty button does, and kind of you go through, like, this kind of weirdly bare bones kind of, it looks like, you know, one of those, here's a virtual simulation of what you'll be facing out in the real world, except that, like, it is the actual level. It's just, like, it's just plain tile, like, floor, walls, and ceiling. This time they actually do start you outdoors, and, you know, the stages are interesting takes on, like, not quite realistic, but, like, somewhat evocative of some abstraction of real life thing. Like, there's a forest level, and the forest level is, you know, there's grass and there's dirt, which is good. But the walls are just wallpaper with the same tree drawn on it, like, 400 times. And the water is, like, this grape Kool-Aid, you know, swirl with, like, two different shades of purple. It doesn't even hurt you. It looks like it should hurt you, but it doesn't. Like, and then, you know, the robots are, like, these cel-shaded guys that, you know, just fire at will, usually in a pattern that you, you know, can easily avoid and stuff. What I do like about this one, I like the boss fights because they will actually, like, kind of fill the room up with bullets. It'll remind you a little bit of that, I can't remember what it's called. It's one of the Toho games that came out early on. I think Burst Battle that came out, like Toho 5 Burst Battle or something like that on the Switch, which had you, like, doing, like, you know, behind the shoulder, like, fights. It behind the shoulder bullet hells, essentially. Kind of like that. But yeah, like, it's kind of challenging without being, like, too, you know, too hellish. You do get 4 points of life, and you can refill your life sometimes. Sometimes those items don't actually pick up, which is weird. You just kind of go right through them. And yeah, it's just like, that's just what it is. It's basically more of the same, but it's a little more intense and a little more, you know, bullet like helly. They kind of throw the, yeah, a little more bullet helly, and they throw, like, interesting levels at you, like, early on rather than kind of wait a couple of levels. And yeah, again, it's just this wonderful, absurd, like, American-Canadian, you know, combat that I quite like. But yeah, it's pretty solid for what it is. And if you have played the first game, this is definitely just basically just more of that.
Well, it's $8. What do you think?
Definitely, if you like the first game, I mean, this is more of that. So go ahead and get it. You know, if you won't really lose anything if you get this one instead of the first game. Because the tutorial doesn't teach you anything you're not going to be able to figure out with the two buttons and directional pad that this game gives you. I like it. I'm going to give it like a solid try it because, yeah, it's, you know, it's not a world beater or anything like that, but it is fun and absurd. And I also like the soundtrack. It's a weird little guy.
Nice. All right, well, moving on, next game to talk about is The Wizard and the Slug, developed by Silkworm, published by Rattlelake Games, released June 10th on Xbox One Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Play as the fastest, most agile slug in video game history together with a spellcasting wizard companion. Jump, dash, and shoot your way through this action 2D platformer with a unique health system plus an assist mode for increased accessibility. A unique mix of fun and epic, this quirky and silly tale offers creative and fun platforming action gameplay. That's right. This got two uniques in it. Pernell, tell us about your time with the wizard and the slug.
Okay. So the wizard and the slug, you play as a slug character who befriends a wizard who goes by the name of Charm. And together you go along with him on an adventure. I won't tell you what it is because that's actually part of the narrative, is for you to figure out why you're going with him and what you're even freaking doing. The actual action of the game is pretty much a side-scrolling platformer. And platforming consists of jumping and firing and eventually dashing as well. You have a mass. It's a large-sized mass for the slug. Every time you fire a shot, or every time you jump, or every time you dash, a portion of the mass gets consumed. You get smaller. After three uses, you become pretty much a core, which is unable to do anything until any of those elements recharge. And if you take a hit while you're in that phase or in that state, you lose health. You only can take two hits before you die. However, the game is fairly generous in regards to replenishing your mass. So if you wait like a second or so, it comes right back. So you won't, even though it sounds like it could be difficult, it's actually not as difficult as it could be. In fact, it's fairly generous and a lot of fun to play. As you're exploring the world, going about your quote-unquote mission, you will come across a variety of individuals that exist within this world. They typically either exist to have colorful flavor text and dialogue or to give you some excuse to move the plot further along. So there's not really, in the sense, in the form of side quests or anything like, just more stuff to either expand the world or just kind of keep you moving forward. But the dialogue that the characters do give you is fairly humorous and funny. I found myself smiling more than a few times while I played this game. I felt as though I was engaged. Like, this was something that when I originally saw it on the eShop, I wasn't prepared to pay much attention to it. I wasn't expecting much out of it. And I came away really happy about this game. This is a title that pretty much has become the first game I finished this summer. It's a lot of fun. And even the combat can be pretty entertaining because, like I said earlier about the whole thing with the mass and the breakdown and all that, in addition to that, you also get more than one type of shot eventually. You start out with just like a generic pellet shot, and you eventually get two or three more, depending on how you play the game. And by use of those, you could switch between them at will using the trigger buttons. And they perform different functions, whether it be like attacking enemies and hurting them through armor or just giving you more versatility in your shots. It's just nice to have access to those things too. The platforming is fun. The boss battles are pretty humorous and entertaining. Not too difficult, but also engaging enough to make you kind of feel like you have to move and evade enemies as they come at you. Or rather as they perform their attacks. And in the event that you do die, checkpoints are also very generous. They don't make you rewatch or reread text. So it lets you pretty much get right back in the action for a retry, even once the platforming starts to become a little more difficult by combining the dashes. And I guess like there are like these like platforming bubbles that you can only jump on when you're the right size character, or energy hearts that allow you to get one mass recharge immediately so you can string along different dashes and jumps. All in all, I'd say this game is a lot of fun. Don't let the graphics and the small, you know, price tag fool you. This is actually a good title. This is not a fuck it, why not? I would go with a solid buy. It comes highly recommended from me.
Cool. Anything else to say? Or I did want to point out the Xbox store page under the features mentions the unique health system. So it is a triple unique for the store page on Xbox, which is
incredible.
I'm impressed by that. That's
awesome.
That's three on one page. That's pretty good uniqueness. I had fun with this one. If people are concerned about the difficulty, they mention the accessibility and you can pretty much just turn on infinite health and infinite jumping. And if you're worried about the difficulty in the game, you can blaze through it fairly easily with the assists on. And if you want to get this for a younger player, I think that's a big help. But yeah, $5, your official verdict, Purnell?
It's a buy. It's a good game.
Cool. All right.
I liked it on Steam, or I reviewed it on like Steam or Windows, one of those.
Probably.
The computer. Yeah.
But yeah, we got one final game to talk about tonight, and we are getting into SML After Dark territory. George, take it away.
SML After Dark.
Sorry, I don't have a way to play it through the call.
That's still, fine. So. That's fine.
You just got to deal with 12 seconds of silence when I play the clip.
So. Oh, boy.
Final game to talk about tonight is Neko Secret Room, developed by Axios Games and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft, released June 16th on the Switch for $6.99. Sneak into your photographer friend's bedroom and find out what she's hiding. Neko Secret Room is a naughty action puzzler where you have to solve the grid-based brain teasers of Chan OS to hack into a database of saucy photos, select pieces of each image and swap them around to discover the correct combination and restore the completed scene. The lovely clients shown within are surely worth the effort. Chris, tell us about your time with Neko Secret Room.
Okay, well, I always end up with the naughty games, it seems.
The fun thing is, I looked this one up. Aki's going to be covering this one in like 2 weeks, the actual original Steam release. So,
yeah. Okay, good. So I don't have to. Okay, I had a plan. I was planning on comparing it to Neko Secret Homecoming, which is the
Steam version. I think they're the same thing. I don't know why they have different names, but
so this one appears to be kind of like a truncated version of it. It doesn't have the same mini games, and it doesn't have the same main character, I don't think. I mean, the main character is kind of a nameless character that you get to customize anyway, so I don't know, maybe it is the same character. But basically, yeah, you the game opens with this weird looking like 3D sexy lady who's like got no pants on and is sneaking to a room that in an empty house into an empty room where there's nobody but two cats, and like all the windows are open and stuff, and like her goal, I suppose, is to hack into a computer. Like basically you just talk to the computer and then choose gallery. You know, it's no big deal. And there's a couple other little hot spots you can walk to, one of which is, like I said, the shower, where basically you can change her costume into, like, you know, a bikini or like a schoolgirl outfit, you know, what you're expecting. Oh yeah, yeah, Aki, this is one you're going to be covering, so you'll get to see this one for sure. Anyways,
yeah,
so
there's Aki's another not listening. We have her attention.
No. Yeah. And weirdly enough, there's also a darts game that you can play, and it's about as good as the one in Final Fantasy VII Remake, and just as important to the plot. There's also a spot you can walk into, and then your lady just starts dancing, and you have to like push some kind of button to stop her, because otherwise she's just going to do that. She kind of gets stuck there. Reminds me a little bit of Toe Jam and Earl when you run into the hula girls and they like, you know, they force you to dance, except there's no stakes in this game. So it's kind of like, it's just like that. So that's everything you get to do in the game. So the actual gameplay involves, going into this computer and selecting, from two sets. One is favorite photos and the other is photo session. So this is kind of like, this could have been one folder, but this person clearly organizes their computer like I do, and that is to say everything's kind of spread all over the place. And each one has six photos in it of a lady. And each of those pictures has two levels of nudity. The first is not at all, and then the second is topless. And there is no full frontal nudity in this. It is censored, unlike the Steam one if you have the hentai edition, but I'll let Aki take care of that when it comes up. But just to let you know, nudity check for the pervs out there. This is not hentai. This is just straight up topless. Pictures are actually pretty good. They're well drawn. I usually, you know, I kind of laugh a little bit sometimes at the East Asia Soft art, but this one's a little bit better. I think it's higher grade. Everything looks a little bit more kind of, I don't know, got that shiny air, not airbrush look, but like, I don't know what you would call it, but looks to be a next tier above like the last like three or so games that I talked about. The actual puzzle, I was disappointed to find that it is just, well, not disappointed. I was thinking that this is going to maybe be a sliding game puzzle. I'm one of maybe two or three people on the planet that likes sliding puzzles. You know, the old 15 square.
Fucking hate them.
I know most people do, but I actually enjoy them. And I was kind of hoping it'd be that. I was like, okay, it's some real challenge this time, but it's really not. It's like the game, it gives you a couple seconds to look at the picture, and then it scrambles them up into blocks, randomizes them, and then you just gotta like swap around tiles until you got the right picture. Now, putting the girl together is, you know, if you don't know how to do that, then you know you've got bigger problems than this game is gonna fix. So usually you could get the girl to look convincing. The challenge is, which part of the blue sky does this tile go on to? You know, this blue tile. It then becomes a little bit more jigsaw puzzle-y in that you're like, okay, well, there's a solar flare here, so I can kind of follow the curve of that solar flare, and then I can put, you know, piece together that, you know, there's some birds over here. There's like a little sliver of an elbow over here, so I know this goes at the elbow. You know, like, so you can like kind of figure it out, but then once you do that, then the, you get to the next difficulty, which again is, you know, toplessness staring you in the face. And the pieces are smaller, so now you got to put together a harder game. Once again, the lady herself, not a challenge. Although I did accidentally put her entirely in the wrong place on the picture, and then you know when I figured out I had like half a car on her left, where it's the car is actually on her right, then you know I figured it out. But you know, things like that. It takes a few minutes to like put these together. I kind of randomly picked around at like both of the sets. I don't see where either of them is more difficult than the last. They all seem to be pretty much even on challenge. You know, and they have little stars underneath that make me think that there might not be like a hidden, you know, super challenge or anything about this. So I'm thinking that this is basically 24 puzzles composed of 12 pictures. At least as far as I can tell. I, again, did not complete this game, but you know, the you're only real working complaint
hard at it, right?
Oh, you know it. Ba-dum-tsh. So yeah, the only complaint I have really is that, you know, using the Switch controller or anything like that on this one, like you can use the touch controls if you like, and you know, those are pretty intuitive and like I would recommend doing it that way. But if you decide to use the D-pad, if you're anywhere on the upper part of the picture and you accidentally scroll a little too far, which by the way, the cursor, like when you hold down the button, it has about a 2-block slowdown. So it doesn't like stop immediately when you let go of the button. It has momentum. And if it momentums its way to the top option, which is restart, and then you push A, thinking that you're choosing a picture, it will restart the entire puzzle without asking you if you're sure.
Oh.
So I have done that 4 times so far in this game, where I have gotten really, you know, I made a lot of progress, and then I scrolled all the way over and restarted the puzzle, and then just like, ugh. And that's enough to make you like, you know, put the game down for a bit.
So add a confirm option on the reset.
Add a confirm option, yeah. Or, you know, as the player, you know, play this one with the touch screen so you can touch these pictures of topless women.
Well, the game's $6.99. What are your thoughts?
It's pretty fun, I guess. I mean, as far as like puzzle games go, it's the least challenging and most straightforward of any of the ones I've played so far. Apart from, you know, the control slip, I would say that, yeah, it does what it does. This definitely feels like a game more for looking at pictures than it does at actually interacting with them. But that's just because, again, I don't find the swapping tiles kind of puzzles like all that interesting. I definitely did not enjoy the Tarts game. But I played worse. The darts game, by the way, you aim by timing. So, like, if you go, like, left to right, it's going to just start moving the cursor like it's got controller drift. And then you got to, like, time it to where it's in the right place. And I don't know how to get this game to, like, pay attention to your inputs. So I think this is kind of, you know, maybe Aki can give it a go because I know it's in the Steam version, too. But anyways, yeah, I think this is maybe more of a hit on the Steam version. It wasn't super fun, but I did like the art. I think the art's better than the last couple of East Asia Soft games of this ilk that I played.
Cool.
Oh, so I'm gonna give it a try. It if you're you know if you want the content for sure.
Cool, works for me. All right, well, we made it through this episode longer than I thought it would be.
We did. There was ninjas.
There were turtles on the table.
Yes, our 75-minute Ninja Turtle dissertation. Music this episode, might as well play something turtle-related, so we'll play that. Thanks to all y'all for being here. Thanks to Tim for doing his thing as well. Brooke, it's going to be our new ending tradition.
Hooray!
Remembered.
The Jose Canseco tweet of the week is...
Well, I'm sad to say he hasn't really tweeted much this week. His best tweet was 8 hours ago. It's just a video he posted of himself dancing in a skeleton mask. But in lieu of me not being able to read out loud to y'all what makes that tweet so great, I'm going to read you a couple of my favorite Jose Canseco alien tweets.
Sounds good to me.
Can Bigfoot or aliens get coronavirus? I need to know. Next tweet. If I were president, I would give citizenship to aliens at Bigfoot. Next tweet. Aliens need to come and systematically correct our system. And then my favorite aliens, Jose Canseco tweet. I wonder if aliens drink and do drugs. Maybe I will try dating one. Female alien, of course.
Of course.
Of course is also one word. You kind of got to see this one to believe it. I'm gonna text it to Chris now.
That is, yeah, I was going to say that is, that's consistent with his writing style.
So good. I know you were already familiar with him long ago, so it's a little bit of old news. You but big fan, big Canseco fan over here.
Hell yeah, I'm gonna dig out my like Jose Canseco baseball card because I know I still
yes!
have it.
Awesome.
I'm gonna scan that shit.